All right, it's opening day. We made it. We made it. Happy opening day to Blue Jays fans and MLB fans worldwide, because we did it. The long, cold winter is over, the short spring, and now it all matters today. I love that we're playing Let's Play Ball, the Blue Jays song. I was excited to say Blue Jays, but then, you know.
This is the extended cut.
This is the extended cut.
They got to update it. They got to update it with robot umps coming soon. And
you don't have time, right?
The pitcher's
got to
hurry up.
The seventh inning stretch is going to be like, touch your toes, get back in your seat.
Let's go.
We don't have time to mess around.
Double dip. We're doing two today, and they're both nine innings, and they're going to each take 2 hours. Let's go. Fast baseball. Speed baseball.
Goodness. We made it, folks. There's definitely a lot of excitement in today. We got a full day of shows that are only going to be pumping up some Blue Jays content. Of course, we'll do that ourselves. We've got some great, great guests. We teased this yesterday, but we've got Edwin Encarnacion on the show at 8:30 today. Let me tell you, this guy does not speak to the media. We tried to rack our brains.
I myself have been told no thanks in person from him before.
This is a huge get. We're excited to share that with you. Shout out producer Daniele for Landon Edwin. We talk about the parrot celebration.
Have to.
His time in Toronto. And he brings a lot of joy to this interview. We did it yesterday, of course. So stay tuned for that. We'll have Dan Shulman, voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, of course, 8 a.m. and John Morosi. We'll have him every Friday this season long at 7 a.m. Huge spot to fill, because who was our 7 a.m. Friday guest for the last, I don't know, 8 months? Charles Davis. So we only get legends in that time slot. So our Friday 7 a.m. squad.
It's a couple of guys who like to spin a yarn. Charles Davis and John Morosi.
The heartwarming 30-minute block of the week will be our 7 a.m. John Morosi, which will, you know, what happens when the playoffs are still going on and the NFL comes back? And we have Charles Davis and John Morosi head to head for that 7 a.m.
Friday. It sounds like you have an awesome show, is what it sounds like.
Should get them both on the line. I think my heart would explode. Two fabulous, fabulous guys. So we've got a full day of opening day stuff for you today. Of course, 4 p.m., Blue Jays, Cardinals kick it off. All 15 games today, all 30 teams in action. So you just sit on the couch and enjoy baseball being back. Talk about that all morning long, but last night, Leafs and Panthers, we'll get through that. An OT loss.
We will not get through that. We will have an impassioned discussion about the Leafs, because I'm here.
Let's just erase all the rest of the Blue Jays talk and break down this Leafs loss for 3 hours.
Don't tempt me.
Don't tempt me. All right, so Leafs lose to the Panthers, cough up that 2-1 lead late in the game. They end up headed to OT. They lose 3-2. The Panthers all day long, every single quote was that this was a must-win game for them. I think I heard it upwards of 12 times before the game. It didn't look like they were playing a must-win game. They were lucky to win that game, I'll say that.
They got the gift from Jake McCabe via John Tavares early on in that game. Man, we have liked a lot of what Jake McCabe has done. We do not like that.
That was uncharacteristic.
And just not a good, and he's ingratiated himself into this team, but man, throwing the captain a grenade like that, giving him a dash early on in the game. Samsonov's just coming back to the team.
That was the first shot of the game.
It was as brutal a start as you could possibly ask for, but like we've seen from the Leafs a lot lately, is that whether it was that 5-on-3 against Carolina, you don't have the start you want. You're able to kind of, or that was the exact same thing with Nashville, just able to dig themselves out of it, and they do end up losing in overtime. Alex Lyon standing on his head there, good for, well, actually, more sitting on his butt while taunting Austin Matthews in said 3-on-3 overtime. But yeah, that was a must-win game. You saw the way Maurice was riding him there. I don't think that was just about the offside challenge. I don't think that's just what that was about. That was a little bit hot. How would you like your boss talking to you that way?
Oh,
pro sports, different animal.
If anybody talked to me like that, I would be hibernating for weeks. It was frightening. He grilled those guys on the bench. And if you do that lip reading, there's bad lip reading online, which makes me laugh. I watch that all the time on YouTube. If you haven't seen it yet, it's so good. But you knew exactly what Paul Maurice had to say to those guys. It was I'll tell you that.
I could not tell you the last time, and we're both glasses wearers here. I feel like I have to wear mine all the time. I feel like you're an interloper.
Yeah, this is a lot of blue screens.
Okay, well, nope. don't knock it at all.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Do you know how mad you have to be to yelling, get these things out of here?
I need no barrier between you and I.
Like, he looked like a baseball manager arguing a call. He's like, throwing my hat on the floor. I'm taking my glasses off. I think somebody on the team said something to him because he seemed to be just kind of hanging out on the bench there. And then he snapped on one guy.
Crazy.
Which, again, infighting heading into the playoffs, maybe it's good, like iron sharpens iron, or maybe it's a sign of why that team's been terrible all year long. Either or.
And he had a wad of gum in his mouth, and I was waiting for it to fly out.
Because that
you know, the camera was pinned on him.
You know what would have been so much worse for him than that is it going the other way. Do you imagine your mid-rant just, and you're like... And, the boys would never let him finish having it. You would never be able, you would not, there's no way if he started choking on his gum mid-rant that he would have been able to get it back. He would just, all right, rant over.
You gotta sit this one out. Bench.
I think
just
you might.
Say, you mail this one
or
in.
Or you go full Jim Playfair Flames coach and just throw the bench on the ice just to distract. I think that's what you'd have to do. You have to do something.
They end up winning. I don't even know if he was happy about that. He looked like he was just, he looked like, Nick Nurse.
There was a lot of Nick Nurse energy from Paul Maurice last night.
Hey, it worked. They end up winning an OT. But once again, the Leafs, this was a really, really strong game for the Maple Leafs. They don't end up winning. There's bookends of poor mistakes. And in the end, that's kind of what was the difference maker between them winning and them losing. And of course, you mentioned the Lion King in net. Good for this kid, because as soon as they were announced that Alex Lyon, who... I actually watched in college because he went to Yale and one of my good friends went to Yale. So I was always, you know, tuned in a little bit more when they played, and obviously we played against them. So I saw him play live. Three of the seasons that I was down there, he was their starter. But I kind of forgot he existed because he hasn't made much of an impact in the NHL, but he gets an opportunity to play yesterday, like late. And I looked at the book and they had moved the line, like the in-game line, to like 9.5 or 10.
Disrespectful.
Like, this guy's just going to get lit up in net. And he played really, he made some incredible saves. So shout out, like, kudos to him. He kept that team in it. You saw how much it meant to them afterwards, that OT win. Like, they are clawing to get into the playoffs. That's a dangerous team to play against. Any team, that is clawing their way into the playoffs is dangerous to play against, but the Leafs just from almost start to almost finish were the better team.
They were. The most concerning part of the, if I'm going to sit here and actually get worked up, like I'm not going to bother about the loss. They picked up a point. They continue to hold off Tampa. That's all fine. The idea of not closing is concerning, but it's the way they're not doing it. The power play, it's just looking out of sorts again. And I like that they're trying different things. There was a moment in the third where they had Morgan Rielly in one of these kind of two behind the net flank positions almost. And I like trying different things. I like getting Rielly out of that straight power plays or quarterback spot because it's not the most effective role for him. But it's just, we have seen this team do this so many times when the games get tight and you get gifted a power play and you have the talent that you have, you got to find a way. And I don't want to sit here and panic based off one game, but it's not been one game. This has been the thing we've seen year over year. All the losses have looked a little different in the playoffs. Columbus looked different than Montreal looked, and Tampa looked different than the first Boston loss looked, and the second Boston loss looked. But the thing that has been the through line through all of them is the power play just going ice cold, and it's concerning. Now if Matthews is going to be who Austin Matthews is, you hope that can kind of paper over some things, but he scores on the power play because he scores everywhere, but he's not necessarily a power play threat. The Leafs don't have one of those guys. Tavares is more the guy I think of getting most of his work done on the power play with net front presence and stuff, but that's the thing that concerns me from last night's game. It's just the power play going ice cold once again.
And that, if so, everything now looks at Tampa Bay Lightning. And you're right. There's sometimes, if it's going to come down to one or two key moments that when you lose your series, that's capitalizing on special teams and having better goaltending. And Samsonov looked pretty fine in that. Like, he came back from the baby, his first start.
No qualms with any of the goals he let in last night.
They were all like, actually,
it was a gift in the slot, and then a double deflection late in the game that tied it, and then 3-on-3.
Yeah, that's true. But you can't lay this at Samsonov's feet at all. And if the goaltending stays, you know, steady enough, it might come down to being able to capitalize on a power play. And they didn't do that last night. Austin Matthews, though, still looking like he's on fire. Positives to take from that game is that He scored a really nice goal. He's shooting it through goalies a lot now.
Right? I noticed that. Matthews, when he's going, of course, can pick corners with the best of them. But it feels like when he's really feeling it, and we have Jeff on, like you guys always do on Wednesday, and he always makes this point, the idea of there has got to be nothing better for a shooter than not beating a goalie high glove or not putting it exactly where you want, but just blowing it clean through them. And this a couple times the last few games that he's sniped five holes. So really, really nice to see.
So that's a big one. Zach Aston-Reese, he's really turned it on lately. We're talking off the air, but I had basically wrote him out of the lineup. I think it was about 2 weeks ago when we just looked. There's too many players in the bottom six that weren't going to make an impact when Matthew Knies was to return. At this point, we didn't know the timeline on Matthew Knies because he hadn't made it to the Frozen Four yet. So it was potentially last week or the week before. Obviously, that won't be for another week and a half at least. And so Zach Aston-Reese has really played with a little bit of a something to prove here. Still don't know my confidence level in the Zach Aston-Reese playoff series, but hey, respect the effort because he seemed like the odd man out, and he's at least playing with a little something to prove here.
We've had two Zach Aston-Reese games in the last 2.5 weeks.
Then before that, when did we ever have a Zach Aston-Reese game?
Two more than I would have expected in 2023, quite frankly. And I made the point coming off the last one. I'll make the point about this again, and this isn't just about him. This goes for David Camp. If Sam Lafferty wants to throw himself into the mix in this way, Noel Achari, of course, we think he can do this a little more. You can steal a game in a playoff series by your goalie going out and being unbelievable. Mm. Auston Matthews can steal a game. Mitch Marner can do it all the same. But you know what else can steal you a game? Is if Zach Aston-Reese pots you two in a playoff game, there's almost no way the Leafs should lose that game. So I'm not calling it. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But the fact that he's injecting himself in, and I don't think it's lost on him that Matthew Knies gave him the breathing room that he needed. He's going to the Frozen Four. He's not going to come here until probably the second to last game of the season, and that's against Tampa. Boy, what a test for Matthew Knies if he wants to jump into the deep end of the pool. But yeah, Zach Aston-Reese, he has the time available to him, and he's making the best of it. So good on him, and I really like Kampf as well last night.
Yeah, and I guess if you're struggling with Nylander and Tavares looking, I'm going to say Tavares looked slow last night. Yeah. Chris from London feels the same.
This is the thing about Tavares. And people always think of this as, see, Gunning agrees with me. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. It's just a fact. Against slower, plottier teams, Tavares looks better. And guess what Tampa is? We don't think of them as the burners that they are anymore. Boston, really good team. They're not flying up and down the ice. It's a lot of David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron. Yeah. And Nick Foligno's going to come back and play for this team. So, I'm not sitting here saying these are dream matchups for the team, but for Tavares specifically, he would have a way tougher time, I think, in a series against the team like the Devils or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't love that overtime goal. Because it's an error. I don't know what Nylander was
thinking. I think he was trying to draw a penalty. That's the most courteous I can be on the offensive attempt
there. I didn't feel that way at all. I thought it was like, let's dipsy doodle backhand toe drag through the legs, and then the puck goes the other way, and Tavares has got to skate the full length of the ice. You're done at that point. Really nice pass across, though. I believe it was Morgan Rielly trying to defend that one. Yeah, didn't get it. Goes right to the stick of his life as he spent Montour, who's sliding across, apparently having the most incredible season of his life. So yeah, they lose that one in OT, but didn't love the OT goal. Didn't love the first goal of the game, and those are the bookends, and that's kind of a tough pill as well. But Leafs get a point. Leafs still, I think, 6 points up on Tampa for home ice advantage. So not like sound the alarms, but you don't like to see performances that slip away like that. It might have to do with the Bieber jerseys because they're 1-3-1 in those things. And we're good.
We're good.
Yeah.
I like them. And this is not, I love.
The curse, like the Blue Jays red jerseys, remember?
I love to be an old man and scream, get off my lawn. This isn't that. I do not dislike them. I think it was a great move. You know, I've heard Justin Bieber is cool with the children, so great. Go for it. I have no qualms with it. I've just seen it enough. They have beautiful reverse retros they never wear.
I love those jerseys.
They're so good, and they wore them twice, and they said never again, maybe three times. Luke Shen is dying to...
Poor buddy.
He has been here for a month. Now, I think we're all being a little generous with that because he did take a week of that month away from the team, too.
Everybody's having a baby. It's crazy.
So this is the thing. This is either going to be the story of playoff babies, and it will be the summer of babies and cups and all of that, or it will be another first round exit, and all we talk about is a bunch of tired dads on this team. it does feel like. Ooh. Now, the good thing is none of the... Now, Samsonov is a little different. It seems like fringier players have been having babies on this team, okay? I believe Sam Lafferty, I thought I heard that as well, was also potentially in the mix.
Did he plan this?
But I don't know. This is the thing. Like, maybe this is the market inefficiency that we have always been waiting for with this team, is a bunch of tired, ornery dads getting into that playoff mood. Maybe that's the way. But yeah, come on. Let Luke Shen wear a blue jersey.
I know. Or let him wear that reverse retro. It. And the Luke Shen stories were really fun. I think over the last 2 days, we learned a lot about Luke Shen. One, that he really wants to wear the blue Leafs jersey, which he has been elusive.
It's beautiful.
And that he bought, or I don't know if he bought it, he moved into a place here in Toronto, and his next door neighbors.
I don't know how it works at that stratosphere.
Yeah, do you like rent? Like, does
do
somebody
just call up rich guys or us and saying, I'm going to live in Toronto for 2 years?
But his neighbor is Cabrelet.
Love it.
What are the odds? How do you think that happens? You pull out of your driveway and like you're waiting. Oh, hey, buddy, you go ahead. And then it's Tom Scabberley. Like, do you go door to door with like a greeting package, cookies, his wife? Hey, we're new to the neighborhood, and it's Cabrelet.
That must be incredible. And, you know, there are pockets of the city, and this goes back through all iterations of the team, where it's kind of, you know, known or guys will congregate together. That's not uncommon for players. Thomas Cabrelet has been retired for, you know, 10 years now, or close to it, at least not a Leaf in any time. So the fact that, you know, he's going to live wherever he wanted to in the city, that's awesome. It does, again, I don't know if it's like great juju or awful, the fact that it's, hey, from the Cabrelet Leafs, that went so well. It went better than it did for these Leafs. So I don't know. We'll take anything we could get. I know we want to switch gears to baseball here, but quickly,
if you had anything else,
just quickly on the wild card, tough night for the Pens. Isles pick up points, Panthers pick up points.
Man, it's been tough for the Pens for a while.
Well, it's because they're not very good. Yeah. They got a bunch of old guys who are sick, and then
what
a lot of Mark Donks of the world.
If they don't make the playoffs, like, are they just clean in house there?
I don't think they can. They re-upped all those guys for their bridge kind of let's try it one more run with Letang and with Malkin and with Crosby, and you saw the two routes that this can go. We talked to Jeff yesterday about the Blackhawks and the route they chose to take, and it's been painful, and they didn't end up getting anything really for Patrick Kane, and Jonathan Toews is unable to get moved, so they're kind of having the worst of both worlds where the guys are gone and you have nothing to show for it, but this is the cost that it pays to keep an aging core together.
God.
Imagine what you could have flipped Malkin for. Imagine what you could have Letang a little less so because of the health complications. But if Sidney Crosby said, hey, I want to go chase rings somewhere.
Do you think Sidney Crosby will ever wear another jersey?
I think there is a...
I hope not.
I think there's the chance of the Montreal thing for a last lap, a last spin, especially if, as it works, that he's ready to go and they're right
better.
On the, which is my absolute nightmare
that
fuel. I
terrible.
Do not want any part of that, but I would love a world where Crosby is just a pen, but a little, that's what I mostly want, but a little small piece of me does want to see late career mercenary Crosby, 1 year deals for just whoever he thinks has the best chance to win a cup, because can you imagine just insert... Now, again, it would never happen. Everything we know about Crosby is the biggest creature of habit in a world full of creatures of habit. But could you imagine just inserting him into... Again, I'll just pick a team. The Devils are going to be ready to rock in a year or two here. Imagine just inserting that guy in there. Late career mercenary Crosby.
Like a younger roster, too. Like, just bringing Crosby into your locker room.
The idea of late career mercenary Crosby very much intrigues me, but it'll never happen.
I hope not. I feel like also he's super loyal, and I think he just understands like his legacy.
You know what he should
Penguins.
Be? He should be loyal to the game and go chase rings.
I agree, but I don't see it in him. He's just
Canadian
boy.
It's not going to happen. Everything we know about him.
He's won some rings.
He's won a couple. He's won a few things.
He's good.
Serial winner, as Babs likes to call him.
Ovi plays for a different team, or Crosby plays for a different team?
I actually think it's more likely that it's Crosby, because I think that Crosby and the Penguins, they have done it all. Mm-hmm. They've won many times. They've had it. I can see a world where it's a conversation, whereas I think that Alex Ovechkin is the Capitals. And, you know, they've had teams before him, but nobody of consequence like him. He is not the Mount Rushmore. He is the Statue of Liberty for their franchise. There is no Mount Rushmore outside of him. And, you know, again, no knock on players that have been great for that team, but nobody of that stature. So I just don't see a world where he wants to go be a Pred or a Wing or something. Yeah, not a Pred. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have even said that.
Was
gross.
Any of those teams.
Preds was the worst
one.
Yeah,
you couldn't have picked a worse one, really.
Like, at least the Predators. Coyotes, everyone ends up there.
Yeah, that's
even
right.
On paper.
He'll be on there somehow.
One day.
One of his contracts. Yes. Boy. Anyway, all right, so I don't have much more from this Leafs game. It was,
no, even I say we can park the hockey conversation. Yeah,
they're back in action. They're on the road against the Sens, so that'll be a big one Saturday night. Hockey Night in Canada, then back home against the Red Wings, so a little back-to-back action. You know, Battle of Ontario is always a pretty good one. I wonder if we see Matt Murray again in that opportunity. I think it would be really great to see him get another chance against a former team on a good spot on the road, but he did just do that. Two weeks ago and had a really great performance.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe Samsonov needs to get back in there and get a couple under his belt. I have no idea what they're...
Sheldon Keefe spoke about the home road splits yesterday, saying that it was something they're aware of, they're noticing.
Does he try to tip that?
Well, I actually think it's really interesting. Does he lean into it and say, all right, let's go Murray on the road, see how this goes. Let's go Sammy at home, see how this goes. Hmm. Or does he try to flip it and say, okay, Sammy, can you do it on the road?
I think it's
more about that. Matt Murray, this is not me throwing him away, but it is me saying he should not be the number one heading into the playoffs. It's just we've seen the body of work. We saw there was a world where Samsonov came back last night and he was all out of sorts and say, okay, until I see differently, it's a fair conversation to have. He looked fine. He didn't look great, but he looked fine for a guy who's been off for a week, basically just had a baby. Looked really good, actually, if I'm gonna weigh all those things into it. So I would like to see that, because I think you got to know what you have in Samsonov. And look, if this team goes on a big run, you're gonna need them both for sure. But to get through Tampa, you might only need one. So you want to know who the one is and if he can play on the road, because it's Ilya Samsonov.
I think he tries to blender it up and get rid of the home away split like mentality, because what if you ride in Samsonov and then you're on the road and Samsonov, like, you know that you can't win on the road.
Exactly.
Like, there's a little bit of that in your brain. Like, he has been dominant on home ice. Well, mostly dominant on home ice. And then you go play against the Tampa Bay Lightning on the road. I don't know. I think that you want to see him get a couple road wins under his belt. Anyway,
I just have to sneak in this text, because this is my burner account that texted in namelessly. You don't think Crosby would want to play with McJesus in Toronto? Just throwing that out there. I jest, but I do hold out hope that John Tavares' $11 million contract is the perfect placeholder for Connor McDavid's eventual deal in Toronto.
I think you're not alone in that one, line.
I'm not.
There's some people that love to mention John Tavares' contract.
Oh, the contract, a lot of people like to mention it. I'm just the one who ties it to Connor McDavid's inevitable signing with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Could happen.
I've been screaming it into the void forever, so I'm getting credit for that one should it happen.
All right, the real fun stuff today and moving forward. It's MLB season has finally arrived. Months and months of anticipation. Couple weeks of spring training. The Yusei Kikuchi MVP of the Grapefruit League. It's been awarded. Now we move on to the real deal, see how all this shakes out when the stakes matter. The Blue Jays embark on a very long journey ahead. And the anticipation, the stakes are high this year with this team. They're another year older, another year wiser. They've got an entire offseason thinking about the dramatic and embarrassing way that their season ended. And I wonder how much extra oomph that puts in the gym, that puts in your preparation, and I hope we see it. There's been a level of intensity at training camp that we hear from all the players saying that it's tenfold more serious. It's a different year with they lost some really important, you know, locker room guys, but I think that allows for an opportunity for some of these younger players like a Vladdy, like a Bo, like a Manoah to own some of these leadership roles, to say, hey, I'm not just the future of this franchise, I'm the current level of what's going to bring us to the playoffs. So I'm really excited. I'm wearing my Jay's sweater. We got Josh in his jersey. I saw a couple guys in the newsroom on 680 wearing jerseys. It's exciting. I can't wait. So just saying that.
There's palpable energy in the building.
That's
and
right.
there's only about
even at 6 a.m.
14 people here now. I can only imagine how it'll be when actual people start showing up for work. Yeah, look, opening day's awesome. There is... all the other teams in the city got to share it, right? Mm-hmm. When the Raptors are going, the Leafs are going, TFC's in the mix there. I feel like TFC both never plays and never stops playing. They got to share it with everybody. But the Blue Jays have it to themselves. Mm-hmm. And look, of course, we hope there's a lengthy playoff run here. And one day that Leafs playoff run will coincide with the Blue Jays regular season. Hasn't happened any time recently. And there is just nothing like the buzz in the city when this Jays team gets going. Obviously, it's great at the start of a year, kind of regardless. But if if this team gets off to a hot start, especially with the idea of the renovated stadium and they're going to be on the road for a while and coming home, it could be a really kind of special feel to the start of this season. And what you mentioned there about the changes to the roster, I think that's going to be really interesting to see it play out. You know, Teoscar Hernandez, really big presence on this team. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., really, really big presence on this team. And, you know, George Springer is still there. I think he's the, I don't know, kind of de facto captain just in terms of everything he's accomplished in the game. But yeah, you've handed the car keys to Vladdy. You did that a long time ago. Bo has his 3-year deal now, so you don't have to constantly do this this thing every single year with Bichette and arbitration. So I just think those guys are in a really, really nice place. You have lineup versatility. And I think the most important thing is that you just have more ways you can win ball games with this club, on paper at least, than you did last year. So much of last year was, okay, you're going to get a great start, and then, okay, you could probably win regardless. Mm-hmm. Are you going to slug your way to a win? And look, this is not me saying, oh, we need more small ball in baseball. I love homers. I love guys thumping, okay? But you cannot rely on that every single day. And so much of what this team did last year was that. Throw in a Varsho, even throw in a lefty bat like Belt, who I know is a thumper as well. The depth pieces you have, there's so much to like, and it should be a really interesting team. And I think that's going to be kind of the most fun part of the first 20 games of the season, just see how different they look.
Kicks off today, 4 p.m. Eastern, but we've got pregame coverage, 3 o'clock on Sportsnet, first pitch, 4 o'clock. You'll have that at Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 Fan, streaming on sportsnet.ca/590, as well as the Sportsnet app. Blair and Barker are back to 2 hours as well, so they'll tee it all up. They'll have post-game stuff as well. You cannot get enough Blue Jays content on our station and our network, so get excited. We're going to start it off here because we've done this for Maple Leafs and Raptors, bold predictions, over-unders, and this is the time to do it. You only get one opening day to make your predictions, to record them, to have them heard, and to be accountable for them when they're right or they're wrong. So we're doing that today. Producer Daniele put some work in and listed quite a few questions with over-unders for us to try to stake a big prediction in how the season goes. So we'll run through some of those. And also, just a reminder, and we said this at the end of yesterday's show, but at 7:30, we'll be taking your calls live on the air. It's your opportunity to come on to tell us how you're feeling about the Blue Jays this year, what your expectations are, maybe what a successful season is, any points of, you know, curiosity you don't have answered yet. Nonetheless, we'll take your phone calls at 7:30, 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, or *590, which is just the easiest way. We got that. Any way you want to contact us, we'll start taking the calls around 7:30, and you can come on and you can chat and get teed up for the Blue Jays season. So that's an early reminder for that. But let's start with our over-unders. Now, the biggest level of excitement possibly this entire spring training was Yusei Kikuchi. He was the MVP of the Grapefruit League, as we know and we love, but a lot of that is how applicable is that to the regular season? Now that's going to be the major question. So will Yusei Kikuchi pitch over or under 120 innings? And for context, last year he pitched 100 innings with 20 starts. I'll let you go first, Gunner.
Bang the over. I can't believe I'm saying it. Bang the over. They're going to need him. Okay. Mm-hmm. This team improved what's in front of him and didn't really improve all that much in terms of what's behind him. These kind of quad A guys or the triple A depth starters, still an issue for this team. They're going to need him. It's a long season. Somebody's going to get hurt. And I'm not even talking about a calamity injury. Somebody's going to have a bruised finger. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to have a blister. Somebody's going to need just a week, miss a start here or there, those types of things. There is no more injury that is totally legit than a pitcher with a blister or a hangnail that sounds absolutely ridiculous. You got to find a better word for it, like bruise to contusion. We got to find the like more medically sounding version of, I guess, medically correct version as opposed to medically sounding. So yeah, bang the over for sure.
I'm on it as well. Over 120 innings pitched. He only started 20 games last year, and then if he got into the bullpen as well. But if he's going to be in the rotation, I think he's going to start closer to 30 games. If he gets 5 innings each game, the math's, he'll hit the over no problem. The only reason this doesn't happen is A, he moves to the bullpen, or he isn't on the team anymore. And I really hope that's not the case. And I hope that what we saw in spring training is the real level of Kikuchi.
I actually think this is a roundabout way to think about it. if he gets traded, you should be thrilled, because the only way that happens is if he is lights out. Now, it would signal a weird direction for a team that's in complete win now mode, so it's not happening. But if he does get traded, it is almost certainly a sign that, one, they're spending that cash elsewhere, or two, he's deserving of said cash and they can actually get an asset for him. So win-win.
There you go. All right, so we're both hitting the over on that. Next question. Jordan Romano, over or under 34.5 saves. Now, for context, he did get his first All-Star nod last year and posted a career high of 36 saves. So the over-under set at 34. I'll go first. Under. And for reasons that I mentioned yesterday, if you hadn't heard, we kind of did bold predictions as well, or you know, players that might disappoint. Disappoint's a tough word. I don't mean it in that sense. I just mean it's really
regress.
Hard.
Just a little regression.
I think it's really, really hard to duplicate a season that Jordan Romano had last year. He doesn't have that overwhelming fastball that you and I talked about. You need someone that throws over 100 that you just can't hit. It's possible that he maybe isn't even the closer the whole year. And I think that's also a good point, is if the Blue Jays go all in at the trade deadline, they're looking to add, you know, there could be someone up available that might take some of the Jordan Romano workload off. So under, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, significantly under, but if it's 34.5 and he hit 36 last year, I could see it being closer just to like a 30. So I'm going under.
Do you know how many players in baseball had over 35 saves last season?
I would say three.
Five.
Okay.
Okay. So
Edwin Diaz.
Yeah. It's Class A, Jansen, Hendricks, Hader, Romano.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that did it last year. Those guys are all extremely capable, and I'm not saying Romano's not. I don't know that he's a special guy like that that can do it year over year. Like you said, he had the perfect season last year. Yeah. He did have the wobbles towards the playoffs at the end, which obviously was super concerning. But for the most part, that was kind of as good as a year as you could ask. It was a team that was winning games. They were putting him in position to get saves. I can see him easily ending up in the 30s, but just that's a really small club, and to be part of it again, tough to do. So I'm with you, under.
All right. Last year, the Jays had five players with more than 20 home runs. Vlad, Chapman, Teoscar, Springer, and Bichette. Over under, the total number of players that hit 20 home runs this season is set at 3.5. I'm going over. I could even see this being over 4.5, because I wrote down, oh, who's going to get over, 20 home runs this year? Vlad, Chapman, Springer, Bichette, maybe Varsho, maybe Danny Jansen, who I'm seeing a big breakout year for again.
I love Jano.
And maybe even Belt, if he gets enough opportunities at bat.
Alejandro.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, there's a lot of options. I think over 3.5 is certainly possible, maybe even 4.5.
Yeah, if this number was 25, I would take the under. But I just think 20, there's more than enough guys that are capable of getting there. They're not all going to do it. This isn't going to be a team that ends up with seven guys that hit 20 bombs or something along those lines.
But 4 is doable.
But Belt can get, you know, a quarter of the way there or almost half the way there in a hot month. Any of those guys are capable of doing that, and that's why I think, you're just going to see it. I mean, Vladdy feels like a borderline lock. Springer, if he's going to be healthy, big if, but the same. Bichette, I could see him having an awesome year where he doesn't quite get there, but then you just throw in, like we said, Varsho and Kirk and Jansen, Springer into the mix as well. Yeah, there's a lot to like in terms of the outfield depth and just the depth of the lineup as a whole.
And then don't forget the different dimensions of the Rogers Center.
That's right,
a lot of things, a lot of things that could play into a couple added home runs, which would be fun. Okay.
Just a painful reminder coming for everyone. It's a short porch for the
everybody.
Other teams,
yeah.
too. Yeah, just clarifying.
Aaron Judge in the short porch will be very fun. Okay, the Blue Jays had six.
You and I have very different definitions of fun. Yeah.
The Blue Jays had six players named to the All-Star game last year. How many will they have in 2023? Now, for context, Springer last year was one of them, didn't attend. They had Vlad, Kirk, Manoah, Romano, and Espinal, and the year before they had four, which was Vlad, Bo, Teoscar, and Semien. The over-under is set at 4.5 for All-Star game this year.
I'll go first.
Okay.
This is under because Santiago Espinal was a fake All-Star. Mm. Now, those still count, but he went after, and look, this is no knock. This happens in every league. Espinal had a nice season, but when we close our eyes, let's all be honest here. Do we think of Santiago Espinal as nice utility player or Major League Baseball All-Star? Because I know which way I go on that. And you might have a season where 30 more guys say, I'm good, no thanks, and you get pretty far down the depth chart, but that's just a lot to ask. Again, it was a kind of dream scenario. You had a lot of guys having great first half of the seasons, Kirk included in that. Maybe he turns it on late. Yeah, you gladly have guys stumble stumble to start the season, not be all-stars and play their way into it. So I'm going to go under there.
I'm under as well. When I looked at who I think is a lock, Vlad, I really think Kerr can do it again because, you know, what other catch other than this Adley Rutschman guy is probably going to be better than Kirk, especially if he's hitting cleanup or he's mm-hmm. getting more opportunities. So Vlad and Kirk.
What a weapon that Rutschman is.
I know, right? Scary. So Vlad and Kirk, yes. Manoah slash Gausman, one of those guys. And then one of Bo or Springer. That's still four, right? So I think if four Blue Jays and out of the slashes, Manoah or Gausman, I think it's going to be Gausman. I'm really fired up about Gausman this year. You'll see in my bold predictions. Or one of Bo and Springer. That's still four. I'd be certainly pretty pleased that the Blue Jays had four All-Stars this year. So I think we're both under for that one. Okay, here's a name we haven't said out loud in a while. Hyunjin Ryu.
It's been 84 years.
There he is. He's working his way back from Tommy John surgery, hoping to return to the Blue Jays lineup sometime in July. Over under, Ryu starts in 2023 at 7.5 for context. He made 6 last year before the injury. And in 2021, he made 31 starts. I'll go first. Under. Now, look at their rotation now. For Hyunjin Ryu to come in, this is a conversation about Kikuchi. Kikuchi's got to be garbage to kick him out at this point, right? Unless there's two injuries. Now, there's always injuries in the starting rotation, so I do think there's a certain path for this to happen. But if we're talking about him coming back in July, what's around July? Trade deadline. Mm. I think if you're adding someone, you're adding someone other than Hyunjin Ryu at this point. If you're going all in, you have the trade deadline, you're going to add a pitcher. I could even see a world where he doesn't even pitch this year, right? Like injury, coming back from injury is not always easy. Hyunjin Ryu has been like quietly rehabbing. This is a really nice thing to say that he might come back in July, but there's always reason that this might not happen. So I'm going to hit the under in the 7.5 starts.
Okay, I think you're right, but we've been the exact same on everyone. So I'm just going to throw myself a Hyunjin Ryu curveball here and say, I'm going to go over.
Okay.
I think that there's a world where Jose Berríos has the up and down season that we saw from him last year, where Chris Bassitt really struggles and it's just not the guy you wanted to bring in. And they end up going to something of a 6-man rotation while they figure out who they could potentially bring in. And this allows them to use Manoah and Gausman and then maybe kind of play the matchup game with those guys. So I think because of how skittish I am about the season both of those guys are going to have, that's what makes me think it's a possibility. I still think you're right. But for the sake of taking the other side,
of course.
Gotta go over there.
Okay. This is a fun one.
Love this.
John Schneider managed 74 games last season after taking over for Charlie Montoyo. He was ejected twice. Now he's got a full season hopefully ahead of him. How many John Schneider ejections in 2023? We're setting that at 3.5. Over for John Schneider ejections because they got the pitch clock now. You've got new rules. You've got the shift. You've got the new Rogers Center with drunk fans hanging over, things getting thrown on. No, people will be very respectful. You've got box. Like, there's so many different reasons that there can be some chaos in terms of calls. Like, the referees are learning everything on the fly. I think I could see a couple more John Schneider ejections, especially when things get really important for the Blue Jays and there's a missed call. It's going to happen. All right? It's going to happen.
I am also over because that's not the entire knock on Charlie Montoyo was that he would saunter out there and say, hey, I'm not going to get myself tossed.
Very, just, very lovely.
I would like to let you know I had different feelings about the way that call should be made.
I respectfully disagree with your call.
Get out of here with that. Part of the thing that they like about Schneider is that he's fiery, that he's locked in, that he's passionate like this. And you also nailed it with, there's just going to be a different vibe this year. And the other parts of this as well are that unless they hit that sweet spot, there's a lot of expectations for this team. So if they're not quite, like, they could have a nice season, but still not be getting to where they want, and you could see a little bit of this. So, yeah, I like a fiery Schneider this year, and the atmosphere of the park, the atmosphere of where the team's supposed to be, another year of this, his first full year with the club, I could see over
as
well.
Big time. All right, a couple more here. Number of Blue Jays hitters to record more than 100 RBIs. Last year, they didn't have a single player top that RBI mark. We're setting it at 0.5. So either there's going to be one or there isn't going to be one. For context, 4 players did it in 2021. Vlad, Bo, Semien, and Teo. I'm doing over. I mean, I was just talking about how I think that they're going to have a lot of home run opportunities. Oh, I picked the over and 5 people getting at least 20 home runs. If Vlad, Bo, Springer, Kirk are hitting well, one of those people can get over 100 RBIs. I'm looking forward to it.
13 players did it in Major League Baseball last year. The Blue Jays are a good team. Some of these teams had multiple guys who do it. You look at the Yankees, you look at the Mets, you look at the Cards. They were those teams. The Blue Jays have the guys to be dangerous in the order together to do that. If you want this team to go anywhere, Vladdy needs 100 RBI
big
this
time.
Year.
Big time. Big time. Speaking of Vlad, okay, so combined total of home runs and stolen bases for Vlad. So last year, you got to do some math here. Last year, he had 32 home runs and 8 stolen bases, so that equals 40. In 2021, he had 48 homers and 4 steals, which equals 52. So the over-under is set at 49.5. This was really, really well set because I struggled. I was right on the fence. I almost said, like, it's going to be 49 and then a half. Like, I don't know which way I was going. But in the end, I said under barely. Because let's say Vladdy gets 40 home runs. He's still got to steal 10 bases. And he's 8 was pretty good last year. I don't know if he can continue to add to that. This one, honestly, I struggle with. I'm just saying under just to say under, but 40 home runs and 10 steals is a lot for Vladdy. I think he'll be really close.
That's boring. I'm going to go full Hulk Hogan, cut my ear to the crowd and
let's
say,
go.
Well, how's he going to go under when he hits 50 bombs this year, Ailish?
If he hits 50 bombs, I'm so happy to lose this bet.
Yeah, I think there's a chance he does it. Again, this is a guy who's special. This is a guy who can do it. And he had a totally fine season for him last year. If this team wants to go the places it's going to go, we talk about it all the time in this market with all the guys. The Raptors are only going to be as good as Pascal Siakam and one day Scotty Barnes are going to be. The Leafs, it's going to be their core four that have to do it. And with this Blue Jays team, it is not just Vladdy. It's not just on his shoulders, but offensively, he has to be the guy. So if you're going to do it, go do it. Hit 50 bombs.
Let's
and then
do it.
Then all the steals will
you
just be gravy anyways.
At this point, also, the bigger bases could make a... It could be the difference between 49 and 50.
Watching
so.
That Daniel Vogelbach commercial.
You go. Okay, couple more here. Yankees. So the Blue Jays played the Yankees 13 times this year. Obviously, with the balanced schedule, it's a little different. Less Yankees, which I'm okay with. Last year, they went 8-11 versus the Yankees. And this year, we're setting the over-under at 7.5 wins versus the Yankees. Now, before you answer, I went and looked at the schedule. In the last 2 weeks of the season, the Blue Jays play the Yankees 6 times in the last 11 games. So this is all going to come down to, basically, the last 2 weeks of the year. They could be playing for the division at that point. I'm going under. I think they're going to get 7 wins against the Yankees, which is still over 500, but under on our bet. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, but I'm going under. I know it's a boring answer, but...
Yeah, it's under. The Yankees are a wagon. They're a really, really good team. They're probably going to be the second best team in the American League all year long behind the Astros. Sorry, hate to tell you. The fact that they have Judge and he could just do Judge things. Gerrit Cole, we all love to make fun of him. Maybe nobody more than me, but he's still a lights out nails pitcher. Cortez looks nasty again. So, yeah, I wish it weren't the case, but under.
Okay, Kevin Kiermaier mentioned this week he believes the Blue Jays can win 100 games. It's not obviously their official win total, but over under 99.5 wins. For context, the Blue Jays have never had a 100 win season. They are plus 275 to win 100 games in the betting market, which to me is outrageous. Their current record is 99 set back in 1985. I'm sorry, under 100 wins, 99.5 wins. The Yankees didn't even get 100 wins last year, and they were like the Bruins last year, right, for the beginning of that season. I think they could get to win the division. You're going to need what 93-95 wins, which is absolutely insane as well. There's no way the Blue Jays win 100 games. If they do, I'll do something crazy. I'll eat another piece of liver like I'm supposed to do next week when Justin returns. 100 wins is honestly outstanding.
Yeah, it's incredible. That's the right move to take the under. Yeah, plus 275 though might be worth
it. It should be way more.
I don't know
to win 100 games. Only plus 275. So you're going to hit the over.
No. I think they're under. I'm just saying. I love a futures bet.
Yeah.
I love a season
I can't
long.
Do it.
I know you can't.
Ugh.
Just teasing
See my
you
money
the whole
sitting
year.
There,
yeah.
eh? I'm like, cash it out. I need a couple loony dogs.
Not even getting interest.
No, it's not. A few more here. Over under Blue Jays pitchers that will reach the 200 innings pitched mark this year. No one reached it last year. Manoah was close at 196.2. The last pitcher to record over 200 plus innings, Marcus Stroman, who's a starting pitcher today, one of the opening days pitchers.
Cubbies.
He was back in 2017. I'm saying over. I think Gausman or Mono will do it and maybe throw a complete game. So just one over.
I'm going to say under. I think that both those guys will have really nice seasons where they throw you a ton of innings, but it'll look exactly like it did. That number there laid it all out for me. 2017's a long time ago.
That's
and
true.
They've had some nice starters in that time. So.
And baseball math about pulling guys because mm-hmm. injuries,
I do wonder early on in the season how much the pitch clock will kind of affect fatigue,
true.
Right? If you're not getting the time to compose yourself, I could see guys being run out a little earlier than
normal. I did not think about that factor.
Just popped into my brain.
That's a good one. Wow, smart guy. Combined strikeouts between Manoah and Gausman. 387.5. So last year they combined for 385, 180 for Manoah, 205 for Gausman. Set it a little bit higher at 387.5. I'm continuing with my over. I'm really high on these two. This tandem of a 1A, 1B starting rotation. I love what I hope will be the season ahead for Manoah and Gausman. So what, three more strikeouts than last year? I think they do it.
I take the over as well, and it's because of the pitch clock. I think that guys are going to be just a little out of rhythm. It'll force pitchers to attack a little bit more, and those guys are two of the best at doing it. So yeah, give me a couple more Ks for those guys. And
all right.
Yeah, there you go.
Two last ones here. The Blue Jays as a team hit exactly 200 home runs last season.
It's nice.
It's nice and tidy. The year before, or in 2021, they hit a league best 262. Now, context, they were not playing in a real ballpark at that point, right?
I remember seeing a lot of those games.
I could have hit a home run there. Over under 200.5 for home runs this season. I'm also hitting the over. New dimensions. We just talked about it, how we're hoping that at least five or six guys can get over 20. I think the Blue Jays can hit over 200 home runs at the Rogers Center alone with the new dimensions.
The new dimensions do make me think it's possible. It's not asking for much. They're not going to get up to where they were in the season where they didn't have many teams or playing in real parks. Love you, Dunedin. Love you, Buffalo. But boy, they aren't that. A bunch of teams did this last year. Dodgers did it. Astros did it. Brewers did it. Braves did it. Mm-hmm. And the Yankees smashed 254 of them. So
Aaron Judge did himself.
He basically did. So yeah, I'm with you there. Over.
Okay. And the final one here before we take a break is Jose Berríos. He's coming off a career worst season, we know that, which he posted a 5.23 ERA across 32 starts. His career ERA is 4.24, and Fangraphs projects him to have a 4.27 ERA, so kind of right in the middle of all that. His ERA was 5.23. We're asking over under ERA of 4.29. There's a lot of numbers in that. So is he either going to have a career... Is he gonna get better significantly, but not higher than his career ERA, or is he going to hit the over? But for me, I'm going under because I'm an optimist. So I think
that's
he's gonna
nice.
Go under 4.29 in his ERA. Fangraphs having it at 4.27, but I don't think he's going to get to his career ERA is what I'm trying to say.
I think he will be over the Fangraphs projection there and over the over-under at 4.29, but I don't think he will be quite as bad as last year where it was 5.23 ERA. So
okay.
I think a little bit of an improvement, but yeah.
Okay. I hope that we are both right in the improvement factor. Okay.
That's about the nicest thing I could say about my expectations
yes.
for him this year.
Well, we'll see. Spring training saw a lot of positive steps for a lot of these guys that we mentioned, but it all starts today. The real deal begins. The Blue Jays march towards what is hopefully a lengthy playoff run. That was our over-unders. We do have some more to get through in terms of bold predictions. We'll present those later in the show. We're going to have your calls at 7:30 as well. We have Edwin Encarnacion at 8:30. We have our buddy John Morosi at 7. Dan Shulman at 8. But on the other side of the break, I'm going to set our Loony Dog season over-under, which I honestly put like half an hour of work in last night. This is an analytical beast, and I'm ready to present that
I'm
on the
excited.
Other side of the break.
Sportsnet 590, the fan. Bam, 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 bam. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, this is it. The really important over-under of the season that you can't find on books, but you can find here on the Fan Morning Show. as the self-proclaimed loony dog connoisseur of this city, I am eager.
You got a fight bunk for that title, or he gives it up willingly?
I went to the game.
Okay, I'm not, I just asked the question.
No, I went to a loony dog's game, and he wasn't even eating it. He's like, that's disgusting.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, you are a fraud. Nonetheless, I'm going. I got a costume this
year. Friday is coming up with him tomorrow.
There you go. So, with this being said, I looked at the numbers last year. So, shout out Shai Davidi for keeping a good tally online. I went back, cross-referenced. Last year was a really important growth opportunity for Loony Dogs in the city. There was 13 games that featured Loony Dogs, including a doubleheader. Because remember, that was a weird one, right? The overall amount of Loony Dogs ended up being 1.18 dogs per fan.
Okay.
A grand total of 444,854 Loony Dogs were consumed, with 377,000 fans in attendance. There's your numbers from last year. That being said, there's only 11 Loony Dogs games this year, which is really sad.
Sorry for your loss.
Nonetheless, we're going to have to really grind, okay? I went through and looked at the teams that the Blue Jays are playing on these 11 games, and I set a predicted attendance number, because this is important.
This is great.
They play some pretty serious teams on some of these 11 games, including the Yankees twice, including the very final Loony Dogs game of the season.
Oof.
They play the Padres, the Astros, the Yankees twice, and then some teams that will still generate around a 25 to 28,000 range of fans. Man, I went through and I predicted the attendance. Now, I predict around an average of 29,500 fans per game. This is including the additional $20 outfield tickets and the entire renovation and buzz. So this is a higher amount of fans per game than last year. I've also increased our predicted dogs per fan from 1.18 to 1.35 dogs per fan.
And what was the methodology to increase the dogs? You just think people are hungry?
New Schneider's porch in the outfield. There's a Loony Dog counter that will be going live during games, which adds a level of intensity and competitive eating. It's going to happen.
A lot of Joey Chestnuts down there.
And an overall added exposure this year for the Loony Dog, thanks to the show and also the Loony Dog Kings and media coverage. So
mostly you.
With this being said, I am setting our over-under of Loony Dogs consumed at 438,750. Now, that is 1.35 dogs per game.
Push. No.
Exactly that many dogs. And I'm going to set that. It is less than last year, but there's two less games. Okay? Let's keep that in mind. I did the numbers. That's our over-under. I hope we smash the over 438,750 Loony Dogs consumed at Rogers Center over 11 home game Loony Dogs. Let's do it. All right.
I can't wait to follow this along on the show all summer long.
It will be a live tally every Tuesday. I've also said I'm going to wear the Loony Dogs costume in the studio every Tuesday, starting with the White Sox, ending with the Yankees. It's a great season ahead. Happy eating, everybody. Let's hit the over. Loony Dogs season has almost begun. On the other side of the break, we got John Morosi, who's going to join us every single Friday. Let's kick it off. Today is first pitch, Yankees-Giants. He's joining us from New York. That's at 1 p.m. Let's get the season going.